Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Chuck Bonner, Julie Hayden. This is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show.
The truth straight up. Well, we are pleased today to be bringing on one of our favorite guests, the vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party, Eric Grossman, who's fighting the good fight. And we thought to ourselves, you know, it used to be...
Well, that's usually not the Democrats, unfortunately.
Yeah, really. That's just on our own side. You know, for a while there was all kinds of stuff going on, good or bad, good and bad, with the Colorado Republican Party. Tons to talk about. And except for you, Eric, do we still have...
Republican Party.
I mean, I haven't heard a peep or anything from anyone.
No emails. I mean, there's no office. Where do you go to engage with somebody other than calling one of us on our cell phone?
I have your cell phone, but I don't even have anyone else's cell phone.
No, they're not going to answer it anyway.
They're going to be like, oh, there's that pesky Julie Bonnewell. A couple of things. There's some stuff going on we want to talk to you about. Specifically, you've got a great event coming up that we want to talk about. But can you maybe, I mean, I know stuff is happening. There have been some executive committee meetings, I think. But
what happened to Mr. Steiner? Did he decide he didn't like the job, or it's more silence is golden when you're chair, or what's
going on?
You know.
In my professional opinion, this is not personality related. This is just me as a professional observer for the past 53 years as an adult, that he's an old school establishment guy of the kind of ilk, you know, that Rush Limbaugh used to talk about. You know, these are the people that existed before the word rhino became parlance, you know. Mm-hmm. So look back 50 years ago, what was an establishment type? And I think that's what you see in our current chairman.
Well, you know, you're right. You do go back to the time when, you know, I mean, a few chairs before, right, where you would, I think your average Republican would be hard-pressed to know who the chair was, to be able to come up with a name, never heard from them, they never did anything. Then we had, again, good and bad, some fairly active ones. So,
what it really goes back to, because I've watched chairs come and go for, oh my God, 30 years now. It reminds me a little more of the Bob Beaupre when the chair was volunteer, a part-time job. You'd pop your head up every once in a while. In the meantime, you worked on what you're doing normally. And, you know, everybody was volunteer. And it was kind of a volunteer position. Then Dick Wadhams came along and wanted $180,000. And it became a full-time job. It was kind of, you know, you get a base salary and all you could eat. And it seems like it's back to, you know, there's no money to pay Mr. Steiner. And he doesn't want to do any work. So it just seems there's no office. There's no correspondence. He spends all his time embroiled in CD3 controversies, which we might want to talk about, trying to prevent the truth from coming out. But other than that, he's not on TV, not on radio. He's not on anything. I mean, he is the mute, blind and mute, chair. I guess it's election season. And, you know, it used to be always unity. That was a call by the rhinos. That was it. Now is we're trying to get Republicans elected, even if they're not Republicans. Yes, that's right. Don't tell us about all our sins and we haven't raised any money. We have no idea what legally we're doing. We don't have no idea whether the judgment for $240,000 is going to go to trial. We don't know anything, but it's all confidential. Remember, I remember he was on a show with the Hispanic Republican. Somebody said, are you transparent? Oh, yeah, I'm totally transparent, but I can't tell you anything because it's all secret. Oh, okay, well then, thanks for transparency.
Is there anything going on?
Well, boy, there's a lot there. Let me finish off the last point about establishment. I think that historically we can look at what is that rot? And it is the philosophical belief that you do as little as possible to generate the least amount of controversy as possible. And I think one of the biggest tragedies of our current Western culture is exactly that. This whole milquetoast approach to everything has led to child mutilation. It has led to the Democrat Socialists of America running candidates. Our society is crumbling, and it's because nobody has the cojones to just lead. And sometimes that's not popular, and sometimes maybe some people, it rubs them in the wrong way. But there's plenty of history to back up that we've gotten to the point now where this go-along, get-along component is destroying us, and it's destroying the state. And you look at the current election cycle. A lot of people are debating the strength or the weakness of the candidates, and the reason why we have that debate going on is because we have a weak party. We have a weak leadership base, and that's gone on for decades. And you bring up Dick Wadhams. I mean, Dick Wadhams is the, I believe, the secretary of the Courageous Colorado group, which is already right. laying down the gauntlet that they're going to come at us and challenge this open primary thing again, when we've clearly voted that we don't want it. And this open primary milquetoast crap, pardon my French, is exactly why the state's in the predicament it's in. I was just reading an article this morning about the Oklahoma governor's race, and Trump's candidate did win that primary barely, but I didn't even know Oklahoma has an open primary. And that has led us to this component of there's not much delineation between a Democrat candidate and a Republican candidate when it comes to a general election. It's the lesser of the evils. And when does that quit? You know, when society crumbles? Well, we're heading that way. Communists are definitely on the march, and we've got no basis to fight them because our party's completely weak.
No, well, exactly. And I think that's what I want to touch on, some specifics. So is there any update on, like, the funding? I mean, last we heard, the judge had sort of vacated the ruling that the party had to pay Britohorn's personal attorney. But is that just kind of in sort of the legal quagmire?
No, I mean, I've heard Matt Arnold is no longer associated with Randy and has left doing anything for the Republican Party. I'm told Randy needs additional money before he'll do any more work. What's going on?
Well, to your opening point there, yes. So there was a Rule 59 that came in our favor, a 59 motion that myself and Tom Bjorklund initiated. And we hired David Pigott to do that because it became sort of evident to your later point that, you know, there's an army you send to the beaches of Normandy, and there's an army that you leave in London to do all the office stuff. And it became very obvious that the army to send to Normandy was David Pigott. And so between David Pigott and myself making the decision, he drafted what was a brilliant piece of lawyering that got the judge to basically reset the clock. So if Clendo wants to come back at the party for the monies he thinks we owe him, which I clearly believe we do not, and it's borderline criminal behavior what they did there, but that's a whole separate story. It basically reset the clock so the party can function. But I'm going to say this, and this is going to be controversial, but I really don't give a rip. This is the kind of man Craig Steiner is. So that Rule 59 motion came out, I believe it was on a Sunday or Monday. I think it was a Monday morning. And I found out about it through the grapevine. The grapevine that informed me of that basically said, here, we're telling you this because we feel like you should know, but we've been told to not tell anybody, and especially not you. You know, a real man would have at least had the gall and the professional testicular fortitude to give me a phone call and say, you know what, we may disagree on a couple things, but I wanted to say thank you. You gave us the basis to operate. And instead, he didn't say anything to me, not one peep. A week and a half goes by. He has his first executive committee meeting. And then, you know, after he goes on this long-winded update speech, then he thanks me at the very end. You know, okay, I see what kind of person you are, and I see how you're leading. And what you're doing is more of this establishment status quo crap. And we're all tired of it. It's why the state has gone so far down the rabbit hole is we got nobody that has the guts to lead. And right. That's got to change. And coming up in the next cycle, which is in the spring of next year, when we reelect everybody at our county reorgs to then vote the next party leadership, that needs to be something to highly focus on. We can't keep doing this Lucy in the football thing, or the state's going to get worse.
And the state is getting worse.
But while while you got to Rule 59 and it overturned the prior determination, that starts the clock again. But there is a clock.
Yeah.
Which you have to file an answer. And if you hope counterclaims and cross claims, and everything else. I mean, it isn't just that nothing happens. You know, legal proceedings are such that they have deadlines and they're pretty mandatory. So I've heard nothing from Steiner, not that he would tell me, but tell anyone. Well, what's our next move?
Yeah, what's the strategy?
Do we have a move?
And let's set this up again, just, Dan, I don't mean to interrupt, but this, the future of the Colorado Republican Party is at stake here. Because yes, it Steve, and you saved it. You saved it once, and hopefully you'll be able to save it again. I mean, if Steiner drops a ball on this, then that means any money donated to the Republican Party from now, frankly, until eternity, basically, is going to go pay Steve Klendah, so no one's going to donate any money, and the party is moot. So it's not like we can, like you said, there is the clock is rolling, yeah, even though, although slowly.
Well, it's not slowly. It's just our reaction appears to be slow.
Well, yeah.
The clock doesn't run slowly. It's has he decided, is he getting together with Klendah to do a surrenderable thing and say, I don't have to file an answer until we agree to pay you everything? Or has he told anybody? I mean, I know you're only the vice chair.
So well, yeah, why would you know?
What the hell would you know? But,
I mean, the answer, Chuck, is I don't know. And nobody knows. He doesn't communicate with me, but nada. And I think that's a strategic component. He, again, that establishment mentality says that we don't want to rock the boat. And so we don't want to overly upset people. And we want to basically let bygones be bygones. And I think after enough time passes, there'll be the argument made, well, let's just let it go. We got to focus on the next cycle. And it's always this Lucy in the football scenario. And that's exactly the playbook that's gone on for decades, is that if we just continue to punt this down the road, then everybody's emotions will temper. Everybody will kind of forget about the egregiousness of what transpired to the point that there's no action. And the problem that I have with that is that we're supposed to be the party of law and order. If we cannot police our own people for malfeasance and borderline criminal behavior, then we have no credibility to preach law and order.
Right.
It just makes no sense to me that a Republican entity is not acting like Republicans. And to that end, these people are not rhinos in establishment anymore. What they really are is the left wing of our party. And that's why you're seeing this culture degenerate to the point. And where you started was, is not only is the future of the Republican Party at stake, but so is the state in general.
Right.
If there's not a check and a balance against this cabal leading us from the dome versus also the east of the Mississippi crowd, which definitely has a tremendous amount of influence over the state, don't be in doubt that DC players are running and puppeteering the state more than we are. And if we don't change that, we're not going to get anywhere. This is going to continue to get worse.
I don't mind them puppeteering, but could they move the puppet? I mean, you know, let's have that puppet move, wave a hand or do something. I mean, okay. You guys are the RNC with a beautiful and talented Christy Fedora leading the way. They're not even puppeteering. I mean, the puppet's just going to lie over on the side.
I guess the theory there being, this would be my speculation, that that's what the puppet has been instructed to do, right?
Without concrete evidence, all we can do, and again, he's not talking to me, so I'm just giving you my two cents, what I can observe, but anybody can observe, what is his actions? And his actions are exactly what you just said. That it's the status quo. We're just going to continue the game as it's being played. And each juncture, we'll just do our best to make sure that we get our milquetoast person in charge so that the status quo continues. And look at the state of New Mexico is in the same boat just south of us. If nobody's looked into their fight that they've got going on internally, it's very similar to ours. And again, the fact that Oklahoma has an open primary right next door, I mean, it seems to me it's not a coincidence that there's a similar playbook going on the borders of our state. And that's because they want to keep their hen house army base here. But if we don't reestablish and take control of this party, we have no beachhead to fight them. And that's the next juncture that we need to focus on.
No, that's really good. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask you about one other thing. I know that there has been some, the executive committee, I understand there's been some sort of push to say that the establishment wing the left wing of the party, they want to be able to get rid of Republicans and kick them out of the party if they, quote, embarrass the party. It's like, well, first I want to say, if that, you can explain if that's correct or not, but secondly, there won't be anyone left in the party. It's even they can't be in there. If you got rid of everybody, and then who decides?
Is this a bylaw or just a general idea? Or what's the
deal here?
Let me read it to you since you brought it up, because to me, again, for quick background, I've only been a part of the party since 2012, when I basically got voluntold, hey, we need somebody to be the chairman of our county. And I was mayor at the time, and I am the type of person, if there's a hole to fill, I'll fill it. So I've been involved since 2012. That said, I've never seen something so un-Republican in my whole life. And basically what I'm about to read for you is section 2 of a conflict of interest policy document that the executive committee just voted in here a week or so ago. And all of it was basically 80% of it was conflict of interest in terms of money. What jobs you can take versus... I'm sorry?
Section 2 of the conflict of interest policy.
Okay, and the conflict of interest policy is a standalone policy, not the bylaws, it's just a conflict of interest.
Yes, okay. Yes. And think of it as the modern day parlance of, you know, how government entities function. So you have rules and regulations, but then you have to have policies. And so this is now a policy that Britta should have put in place, or at least discussed. She didn't do it. So Craig, you know, not to his detriment, I mean, was bringing up something that needed to be brought up. But before I read this, the background was that it got kind of thrust upon us sort of at the last minute. And then we're in the middle of this conversation. And again, 90% of this document is all about financial conflicts of interest. But then in the middle of the financial, there's a section 2. And let me read it for you. Any situation in which an individual associated with the Republican Party is working for, assisting, or publicly associating with a candidate who is not a Republican in a partisan race, or with an organization whose mission conflicts with the Republican Party platform. Okay, and that's basically what I think they're saying there is that, you know, you can't support an independent candidate. I get that. But here's the kicker. Here's the rest of that paragraph. These conflicts of interest are deemed significant to the party as they may hinder the party's ability to be politically successful or may embarrass the party by its representatives being seen as working against the party's goals. Number one, when's the last time we had a policy goal conversation to determine what that is? Secondly, who determines who embarrasses? I mean, let's face it, politics is not a zero-sum game. It's a debate of ideas. And so basically, if we think your idea stinks and if we think your idea embarrasses the party, who determines that? How is that adjudicated?
Yeah.
That ambiguity and the fact that Republicans voted for that language is what's astonishing to me. What I brought up in the meeting was that Section 2 should be pulled aside and either taken separately are not included in the financial conflict of interest component. But no, the XCOM voted overwhelmingly to include that language in there, which just, as I'm sitting here talking about it, blows me away. It's the most un-Republican thing.
What was the vote? Do we know?
Oh, it was 2/3 of the XCOM. I mean, it wasn't an insignificant amount. And by the way, just so you all are aware, I this struck me the day after the meeting that we actually have less grassroots votes on the XCOM now than we did under Britta.
Yeah, but by design, I would say.
I would say. I mean, look at Laura
Cano.
So for whatever reason we disagree, Laura Cano was censured.
Right.
By an overwhelming majority of not only a CD, whatever that CD, CD7 or whatever, and then that carried over into the assembly in March or in April. And how on earth does a membership body vote overwhelmingly to say persona non grata, and then that person gets back on the XCOM? Again, when you look at all these actions of the chairman, it's very obvious where he leans. And he leans basically saying that the establishment, I will listen to them bark, and you grassroots people need to go in the corner and shut up.
Well, if you don't, we'll say you're embarrassing us and we'll kick you out of the party. Right? I mean, to me, that seems like the ultimate thing here is they want to be able to get, I mean, let's go back to Donald Trump was an embarrassment to some people in the Republican Party for a time. So it still is. So are they going to kick him out of the party? So that what this means is a group of rhinos, establishment hacks being controlled by the RNC and people in Washington, D.C., are going to decide if somebody embarrasses them, of which there's no apparent definition, that they could just kick that person out of the party, which isn't even how that works either.
You know, the person can't be kicked out of the party because it's a voluntary designation and there's no kicking out. I suppose they can say you can't run for chair or positions in the Republican Party, But, you know.
Kind of smacks of that document they had of people who were supposed to be refused admittance to the state convention and assembly, right? The do not. So they were embarrassed. Now they're like, they don't, because they don't rise. You can't really rise a level of dangerous anymore. That's kind of hard to do. But on the other hand, you can embarrass people. That's just ridiculous. And do you think it's a coincidence that one weird little line that gives Craig Steiner the ability to kick anyone out of the party that he feels like kicking out was kind of mangled into this whole otherwise kind of non-objectionable conflict of interest policy?
Well, to be clear, I don't think it gives him the ability to do it, but okay. It cracks open the door to have the discussion of what does that mean? And based on the fact that they have the majority votes, they could basically take any of us and say, you're embarrassing the party, you know, and basically this is the context in my view, in my opinion, that we're in an election cycle and we need to not address these issues until after November. But that's another one of those tactics that they use over and over again. Look, the ballot is set. The Republican Party has done its job. It has Republican candidates in as many races as they could get candidates in. And now it's up for that campaign to take place. But this discussion now over the left wing of our party that they constantly want to bury, they don't want to talk about the security document. They don't want to talk about the censorship. They don't want to talk about how they're rigging the game because they think that that inflicts a harm on the election cycle. And I professionally disagree. This conversation that we need to have internally as the party and amongst Republicans is the leadership component for the next cycle in 28. And there's no reason why we can't have that conversation right now. And there's no reason why it needs to wait till after November. That's just another one of those tactics where they try to dilute the enthusiasm, try to dilute the anger to the point that you get past November and like, it's Christmas and Thanksgiving coming up. We don't have time to deal with this. We'll wait again until next spring. And it's always
Phone call in from a Chester Lee Marks on line one. I don't think I know Mr. Marks. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie program.
With Chester. Eric Grossman.
Yeah, this is Chester Lee Marks, by the way. And I met Gable at, Kentucky Fried Chicken place there, around about 11 o'clock and something like in that area. And she gave me her business card and everything, and I just said, well, I would like to, you know, see what your program is really about. So that's what I'm doing
right now. Okay, all right. Well, then, Chester, we're going to let you go, and you can just keep listening, okay, Doug?
So, yeah, right, exactly.
Thank you, Chester. Thank you for listening.
It takes more people to listen to these experiences so that it's not us saying that it's happening. This is the key to this next cycle, in my view. We got to get more people engaged so they can attend these meetings and listen to this for themselves, not just hear me say how I think the meeting went. Let them hear it for their own ears, what's going on. Because what's going on is, it's deplorable. It's not politically parlance, you know, with when Hillary called us deplorables and stuff. What is going on is even maybe worse than that. It's a disgrace. We are not doing right by the state, by the membership body, and by the good of the order by allowing this to continue to get worse and worse. If somebody doesn't stand up to this, this state is going to be lost.
Well, and here's why. I mean, and we see it happening. We've seen, like you said, the former chair of the Colorado Republican Party is now actively pushing, along with Democrats, to have jungle primaries and ranked choice voting in Colorado. Now, they're not going to call it that.
They're not adding ranked choice voting.
Well, they will, though, but that'll be next. Right. That's what they're pushing for. And they're pushing for that so they don't have to worry about candidates or parties. They'll just have billionaire dark money donors.
It's just an aspect.
Rig their candidates, right? And then the candidates are going
to be just like Alaska,
right?
Which is going just really well.
Well, and then really on top of that, the other thing we have going on is the opposition. Now, it'd be one thing if it was just like Democrats, like a Michael Bennett or something, but it's not. It's socialists. I just saw the DSA they've endorsed a socialist. The socialist Denver City Council member is now running for Denver mayor. I mean, who would have thought? In a few,
how could you be worse than the present mayor? It could be. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it could be worse.
How do you get more progressive than Johnson? And it's like,
or more pathetic.
Right, but he's not progressive enough. I mean, and that's what we're up against. And I mean, I could see a scenario where the city of Denver votes for socialist mayor. And like you said, like you talk about the beachhead. And where's the Republican Party you know, even doing anything about, because that's what we're facing. And if we go to open primaries and jungle primaries, the party becomes completely irrelevant. And I kind of happen to think that's what the puppet masters want, but.
It is. This is all a very concerted effort to make us irrelevant. And arguably, we are already irrelevant. That's how dire of a situation this is. I believe it was Representative Boebert who gave an interview on some network here eight weeks ago, where she actually said in the interview that the Republican Party in Colorado is irrelevant. And I would submit that we've got plenty of evidence to say that's exactly been the plan this entire time, is to make us irrelevant. And once again, going back to where we started, there's no office. Who do you engage with? How do you even deal with recruitment when there's just no concerted effort to do anything? We're this kind of, you know, thing that's just sort of living in the ether that the Republican Party exists. And right now, I think we're completely irrelevant. If we don't take the reins back of this organization to at least have a fighting chance to attack the DSA and attack this communist infiltration of our culture, then we're doomed. And this milquetoast leadership is what's leading us there. And that's the one thing that they just don't understand. They're so drunk in power that means more than actually attacking the real enemy. And instead of attacking us, they should be attacking the real enemies of our country and Western culture. But instead, it's all about keeping us neutered and keeping us back behind the scenes. And history says this isn't going to get it done.
No. Well, let me ask you then, too, because we'll let you go here pretty quick. You've got a big event that it seems to address just that coming up, right? You're the speaker at an event going on next week in Parker, Fighting a War That We Deny Exists. Why don't you tell us all about that, what you're going to be talking about? And then before you go, make sure people know how they can attend.
Yeah, and I guess I should have this locked to my brain in terms of those details. Let me pull up the flyer. But long and short of it is that Deep Pepper reached out to me a month or so ago, and we started throwing about the idea of having me come speak at a Parker Conservatives event that she produces on the regular. And we settled on September 2nd, so that's a week from today. And the theme overall of this entire discussion, and I think the theme going into the next election cycle, at least in Colorado, is that we are in a war. And the majority, unfortunately, of our own base denies that it exists because it's this shaming factor. I don't want to be called racist. I don't want to be called this or that. I want to get along with my neighbor who doesn't agree with me. But our culture is crumbling on multiple levels. And the fact that communism is on the march via a socialist outlet is astonishing. And I'm sure there's plenty of people way older than us and our ancestors who are rolling over in their graves that after 250 years, we're allowing this virus to come back again. And everybody's distracting us by fighting amongst ourselves and not taking the war to the real enemy, which are these people that want to crush us. And so that's a continual theme that I'm going to highlight from now until next spring, as we get into the next election cycle, that we're in a war and you have to get off your couch and realize that it exists. And at the same time, if you don't have the stomach for the war, if you'd rather be in London hiding from bombs instead of going to Normandy, then let the people who are brave enough to go to Normandy storm that beachhead. People would have disagreed back then to say, well, you lost tens of thousands of people in one day. Yes, there's going to be some casualties. But at the same time, if we don't establish that beachhead, we've got no way to engage our enemy. And so that's the theme of it, fighting a war that we deny exists. It's, again, next Wednesday, a week from today, September 2nd, 5 to 8 p.m. There's a socialization hour from 5 to 6 and a program and Q&A after. It's at the Deep Space Pikes Peak Events Center, 11020 South Pikes Peak in Parker. I'm sure through online venues you can find out more information, but it's just a first-come, first-serve event. Just come on by and we'll have a legitimate discussion. And my speech is not going to be long-winded. I really want to open up for question and answers because I think that lets God into the room to ask the right questions, to get the right information to the people that are attending. So I welcome anybody to come and see it.
And I know Parker Conservatives has been around for a while and forever. Mark Hampton and his wife Pam used to run it. Now Dee does. And I think so. People, you can find it on Facebook. They're all over the place on social media and things like that. Well, Eric, thank you for coming on. I wish your update was like, oh my God, Julie, we need another hour for me to tell you all the stuff we're doing in the Republican Party. And I don't know. Hopefully, you know, keep fighting the fight too. And, you know, as you said, we can't afford to not.
we can't afford to not. And just to finish that, truthfully, there's not enough time to do a debrief. You could spend a week, several hours a day trying to discuss all this stuff. What I strongly encourage people to do is don't take my word for it. Don't take your word for it. Get involved in your local county party. Start attending meetings. Witness these things for yourself. And if you have the ability to take the blinders off and see what's going on around you, then those are the people we need to engage in this fight. So just get involved and just don't take our word for it, because the evidence is very clear if you have eyes to see it.
All right, Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for everything you do. Yeah. Anytime we can help, just reach out. So thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Sure. No, all thanks. Right. Thanks for having me on. Great time.
All right, yeah. We'll talk to you later. And don't embarrass. Don't do anything embarrassing.
You know, that's what I'm good at. That's my main quality.
You know, kind of tying in with saving the country, well, the other thing I wanted to talk about today, and thank you to Eric, is the... So the court handed the Trump administration sort of a victory. These are the beginning, the first victory in the mail-in ballot fight. And the Colorado is one of the states that was fighting against that, and they've already filed another lawsuit. But, you know, I started looking into this, and unfortunately, I think it's not going to happen this year, but I think there are some good things going on. So basically what Trump wants to do is have the post off, have the Department of Homeland Security compile a list of all of the people who are eligible to vote in the country. Right. And then he wants the states to send them their essentially the list of who they're sending ballots out to. That seems reasonable. And why not compare the two? Right. Why not compare how many people or who the state is, who states are sending ballots to who are not eligible? Maybe nobody's on there. I doubt that. Maybe thousands and thousands and thousands of people on the voter rolls. Right. The other thing the Trump administration wants to do is have a certain degree of election security, where the post office, you would get, there would be an individual QR code on the ballot that is mailed out to you. And then the same QR code would be on the ballot envelope, not the ballot, but the ballot envelope when it gets mailed back. Mm. So you could kind of compare. Let's just say that you have, you could, if you wanted to, and that's obviously step two, but if you wanted to do some kind of audit and you wanted to say, okay, so, you know, we sent a ballot to Jim Jones. This QR code says it went to Jim Jones at this address. And then lo and behold, we see we got a ballot back from Jim from the same address, right? Great. The only problem is what if we can verify that Jim Jones died 5 years ago? Well, who's sending?
He's still good.
Or, you know, Mike O'Donnell is doing a great job of showing some of these homeless shelters, various social service kind of admit places.
You're suppressing the vote, Julie.
Well, yeah, where people are allowed to go and register to vote. I mean, hundreds of people, right? So let's just say we can verify now that 100 ballots were mailed to this homeless shelter and 100 the same ballots were mailed back, returned, right? But then you go and find out, well, God, that shelter was closed 5 years ago. How did that happen?
Again, you're suppressing the vote.
So the court ruled initially that the states that sued essentially didn't have the right to sue quite yet. So, and it didn't have anything to do with the merits of the case.
Which but they got rid of an injunction that the judge put out.
Right.
Prohibiting. And now there's another injunction that was filed. Really, that says the post office can't do anything. The post office said, okay, we won't do anything until, you know, this thing. And they said, well, that you still did some work. And she's threatened to throw them in jail. And, you know, the district courts no longer really care what the Supreme Court says.
Well, they agree with it. Then they want to do it. But here's the thing. Yeah, do I have any hope that this will go in place this year? Absolutely not.
Do you have any hope it'll ever go in place? No.
Not really. But I think what is interesting, and here's I think the silver lining / good news in that, is that Trump has managed to make the whole question of mail-in ballots very much front and center. Mm-hmm. And mainstream media people are being forced to cover it. It's being talked about. And I think upon any kind of scrutiny, even mild, like drive-by scrutiny, you could see the whole mail ballot system is...
Not according to Ken Buck, your former congressman, says we got the gold standard. Everybody loves us.
Fraught with opportunities for fraud.
No, okay? No, Julie. No.
And the fact that, so number one, he's exposing that. And, you know, before you were an election denier and you were censored and you were erased. And if you were Dina Peters, you were thrown in prison for questioning the gold standard. Well, now you've got Trump and the Department of Justice putting the story up there front and center. That, I think, is really good. The other thing I think it exposes is the corruptness of the Democrat states. I think that if you're the average person out there, polls have shown people are like, well, no, you should be an American citizen to vote in an American federal election.
Or Chinese.
Yeah. Or even dead. I think that it, you know, it exposes the fact that the Democrats are so desperate to keep their vote election rigging in place that they're willing to say, no, we don't want to send it. Because I think your average person would say, well, why don't you want to send the rolls in so we can make sure that the only people voting are American citizens
do not do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so their arguments are ludicrous, and I think that it exposes them as well. Now, people like us have known about it. We've talked about it for a while, but I think if you're kind of the average person,
to the staff in the Republican Party who loves the domination by, you know, I was talking to a radio host, and I said, you know, the Republicans haven't won a single race, statewide race,
since
2016 when
mail ballots
and ballot harvesting came in. It's not exactly true because how do you can all want a region race?
But I think
it's easier to say.
Was that an at large?
And so you know they go, really? Oh, is there any connection between? No, no,
it's just coincidence.
Not at all. It's just the Republicans like abortion.
It's just coincidence that the Democrats don't want anyone tracking ballots, because if the ballots have unique QR codes, well, then how do you dump a bunch of ballots, right? You could say, well, wait a minute, this ballot has this return ballot. We have no record of it being sent out. So how could someone have voted it? You know, or it's like,
count it.
You know, why would they, you know, they don't want anyone cleaning up the voter rolls because they want numerous.
And I don't know what state it was, but they had verification by somebody, Islamic person, go, I verify these five people or six people are all, you know, U.S. citizens. And they go, what's that based on? My verification. I don't know. It is. And it's just wonderful that how corrupt the system is. And you can call our friend, the 2020 ballot was Trump cheated? No.
Well, and here's the thing, you know that they're cheating, because why would you be fighting so hard even to try to find out, right? You could argue, look, we don't think that there was any cheating, but go ahead. You check your DHS roll or list of eligible voters against our list of ballots that were mailed out. And if there's any difference, well, by God, we'll make sure that those ballots don't get counted. Then no, they don't want to, they're willing to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. They're willing to actually kind of make fools of themselves in order to prevent that from happening. Here's my thing is you got to wonder, do you think once Trump is gone, do you think those efforts will get buried again? I mean, you got to wonder, why have Republicans not been pushing this before and said that, like you said, they stand up and say, well, we have the gold standard in Colorado. Do you think?
No, because they always give in. I mean, you know, whatever the Democrats do to cheat the vote, the Republicans, well, that's okay. We got to play with the rules. Next time we can change the rules, but we can't really. And I mean, the average Republican is a milquetoast. I mean, they really are. You know, they become Republicans because they have no strong feelings. Well, you know, I'll be a Republican because those Democrats have some really strange views. Now, I don't have any views, but you know, those are strange views. So I'm a Republican. But get them to do anything? Oh, no.
Well, that was Eric's point, right?
Yeah, it was Eric's point.
Yeah.
But that's your modern day. And apparently, we've got an executive committee that I thought was pretty close, but no longer. I mean, they're happy with.
You're talking about the party executive committee.
Yeah.
Well, and I think to Eric's point, they'd rather kind of argue about little internal you know, like passing a bylaw or a policy that says you can be kicked out of the party if you do something that embarrasses it, rather than be like, oh my God, you know, for instance, to me, for the Republicans to be talking about what we talked about the other day, a downtown Denver skyscraper that was worth $30 million 10 years ago sold last week for $3 million to a guy who's
lucky to get it.
And it was in a foreclosure auction. And that's just one of many. There have been other ones that have sold for less, that have sold for like $1 million, right? And they're not going to be renovated. This guy's just going to sit on the property until, you know, maybe hopefully sometime it turns around and then he can sell it. And so downtown Denver is being destroyed. The tax base is being destroyed. Oh, I mean, when that happens, there are ripple effects and people think, well, it doesn't really affect me. You know, if Denver elects a socialist, it does affect you. It doesn't really affect me if the legislature is filled with radical Democrats or a socialist. It does affect you. They want to take over your means of production. And you know what I mean? And they want to take, I mean, look at how businesses are fleeing Colorado already. You know, where's your kid going to get a job? You know, not forget a summer job, you know, forget lifeguarding for, you know, it does affect people. And you're right. Eric is absolutely right. It's a battle that needs to be fought and people need to wake up and instead of, I don't know, getting involved in these petty fights. But I think that's why this election integrity thing is, again, it's not going to pass right now. I'm betting the courts will stop it. Or at least it would be so bogged down in the courts that Trump will be gone. Yes. I think that's their goal. Just keep it bogged down until Trump is gone. But at least the conversation is out there, right? And I think the Democrats, once again, are being exposed as this is what they're for, right? They're not for, it's not voter suppression, figuring out if you're an American citizen to vote. It shouldn't, you know, shouldn't be a controversial thing. And it's not really. Well, only in the month of the Democrats, you know.
Well, they're the ones in charge of it, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of that, that leads me kind of the last thing I wanted to talk about.
What is
that? So I saw this. So Meta, Facebook, was in court this week. A bunch of states, including Colorado, go figure, Phil Weiser, were suing it over not having enough safety measures in place for children who are on the platform. And I have mixed feelings about all of that anyway. But Meta, which has bazillions and bazillions of dollars, agreed to like some kind of billions, I think $17 billion settlement, rather than put Mark Zuckerberg on the stand, right? Yeah. Things are not looking good. I mean, there were all kinds of court documents that say, surprisingly, not really, you know, Meta was about making money, not protecting children. It's like, well, go figure. how do we think Mark Zuckerberg became a billionaire, you know? But my question is,
I got it.
That's
go
Mark
ahead.
Zuckerberg. It's, okay, like
Mark is calling in again. Joy.
But here's what we get as part of the settlement. So Colorado, good for Colorado, is going to get $615 million that Phil Weiser and the Democrats at the legislature will get to distribute.
Oh, yeah,
and
to themselves.
No, here's where it goes. It goes, quote, directly to protecting and restoring the mental health and safety of Colorado children.
I.e. Phil Weiser.
And now what the frick does that mean?
That means they're going to give it to their friends. They're going to give it to Planned Parenthood.
They're
going to give it to these phony NGOs they've just set up to get the $615 million.
The Democrat legislator who has her own NGO and pays herself and her whole
for
family.
NGO.
Votes. That's
you need
right.
an NGO.
An NGO directed, designed to
Checking
protect.
NGO.
We're going to protect and restore the mental health and safety of
that'll
Colorado
be good.
Children.
That'll be good.
What on earth does that mean? What that means is I also think it's going to go more to transgender studies.
Oh,
to be
absolutely.
To fund. I mean, because that'll help the mental health. You look at these settlements and it's like, do we think that any child is actually going to benefit from the six?
Really?
Here's the thing. I mean, I don't know how many children there are in Colorado. They could give each child a chunk of change. That would probably go a long way to restoring mental health.
Those
you
kids
know?
Will buy alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta stop that.
Right. Yeah. Like Eric says here, pay for gender affirming care, homeless embezzlement like California.
Exactly.
It's like so many of these settlements, and we've covered it before, you know, where the state wins money, and it's like, yay, we won all this money, yay, Phil Weiser, who's running for governor, by the way, just got Colorado $615 million to help children.
Let's give them teachers, yay!
It's like, where's it going to go? you know, and they didn't say, and no one's ever going to track it. You know, nobody's ever going to say, well, but where did that money actually go, Phil? Uh-huh. And if you, you know, and as you said, Phil's family members are now setting up protecting the children's mental health NGOs, right? That's where it's going to go.
Group sessions, and right. Which don't really occur. But.
And the teachers, I don't know about this, there's actually the complete Colorado, and I forget the columnist, there's a good column in there where it talked about the CMAS, the standardized test results are in for Colorado students. And they were saying, they were spinning it like, reach historic highs. And the guy, he said, it's kind of like if your kid has all Fs, and then when you look at the actual results, right? If your kid has all Fs and they raise their grade to a D minus, and then you trumpet this, hooray, we're getting better. It's like, no, we're not. So the results were abysmal, right? The majority of Colorado students in between third and eighth grade are the majority, right? The majority are not meeting the accepted standards in reading, writing, math.
Well, how many teachers do you think could pass those?
Right. Well, here's what I'm wondering if this is going to be next, right? The teachers, I wonder how long it is before they get rid of those tests. Because
I hate tests.
Well, and this one in particular, because it keeps making them look bad, right?
Look like piece of shit they are.
And the school, so I bet pretty soon they're going to be like, you know, those were racist or something like that, right?
Well, you know, they got rid of the SATs, especially in California, but all over the place. They got rid of the SATs. And then all the teachers said, yeah, but we have kids in here who literally can't do eighth grade math. You know, give them a remedial. Because they can't tell. Yay, straight A's from Columbine B School. Well, that's all they hand out. There's nothing but A's.
Right.
And we don't class rank. Class, no, we don't do class rank.
That hurts their mental. We have to protect their mental health. Right. My guess is, because I know the kids hate them too, I wouldn't be surprised if not too far in the distant future, they get rid of those tests.
Right. Leave no child behind while murdering them.
Right.
So
that'll be, okay, well, that'll do it for us today. On Monday.
Oh, you can ask me about anything else.
Do you have anything else to say?
No.
Okay. On Monday, well, you know, I've been reading a lot about the debt, which is, I mean, it's almost the national debt, which is like, which is like ridiculous.
Are you supposed to tease people to get excited about the national debt?
Well, Kerry Lutz is going to come on and explain why he's got, I read his column. It's an interesting column. He's like, he said, it's a kind of thing that doesn't matter because it's so out of control, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter until it does. Right. And he said, and it always does. And he was saying, once again, it's the middle class is going to end up paying. And he's got a really interesting take on it. You know, he says, if you're a rich guy, you've got enough other things that, you know, when things start to fall apart, you'll be fine. But he said, it's the inflation, the cash inflation is what's really going to hit the middle class.
Eventually you get to France in 1786, and the, you know, the peasants will be at the Bastille pretty soon,
right.
Eventually. And it's okay because we got democratic socialists
in charge.
In charge.
Hey, that'll do it for us, everybody. Thank you to Eric Grossman.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
And everybody at EBS, everybody on Zoom here, and we'll see you all on Monday.
And love to Chester. Love you.